Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
I hope this episode sounds better than our previous news episode. We do have our new recording set up kind of together. It's not completely soundproofed yet, but we got some new fancy microphones.
Yeah.
So I hope you can hear better sound quality.
And Keegan and I are like 6 feet apart from each other.
Yes. Listen, it's not a perfect system right now. We're using my writing desk. We're on opposite ends of my writing desk. So
I mean, hey, it works great. It just I'm so used to being on top of you. That
right.
Being this far away from you, I'm like, hi over there.
Hey, from across the pond.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, what should we get started with today?
Well, everything I have is terrible. So,
okay, I have one terrible thing and I have one positive thing to end the episode with. I finally did notes on the condo collapse.
Oh, gosh. I've been seeing headlines about that. I have not been reading them except to see that I think the number is at 95 deaths now or something like that.
Yeah, it was 94 when I did my notes, but I believe it's 95. Now, I've been kind of doing the same where I've been doing a lot of headline reading because it's really, really heavy and it's a lot. It's a lot of very senseless death. You know, it's really incredibly sad, but we haven't talked about it yet on the show. Should I get us started with that?
Yes, please.
Okay. So let's go back a few weeks to June 24th, 2021 at approximately 1 p.m. Eastern Time at the Champlain Towers South, which was a 12-story beachfront condo complex in the Miami suburb of Surfside, partially collapsed. As of July 13th, when I took these notes, which I think the number is still the same, a total of 95 lives have been lost in this disaster, making it one of the deadliest collapses in American history. And this, I don't think there was any deaths. And if there were, it was very, very few. But it's something that was a really scary moment for me was when the 35W bridge collapsed between St. Paul and Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can get there.
Mm-hmm.
I was in driver's ed class when it collapsed and it was so, so scary.
You know what? I feel like I heard more about that and I wasn't even, I wasn't in Minnesota or anything at the time.
It was huge news.
I heard more about that than people are talking about this building collapse. It's not they're not it's getting some airtime, but it seems for the gravity of what it is and how senseless it is that we should be hearing, it should be everywhere.
Yeah.
And I feel and maybe it's also just because now I'm not on Instagram and Facebook, but this happened when I was.
Yeah.
And I feel people would talk about it here or there, or I'd be listening to Daily Zeitgeist and they'd bring it up. But this is a massive tragedy, senseless tragedy that I feel why isn't this dominating shit,
Yeah, I don't know if we've become kind of desensitized in a way to this kind of tragedy, especially after the amount of death we've experienced in the past year with the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know if that could be part of it. But yeah, I've noticed that too. You know, on my phone, I keep the news tab at the very top, which kind of cycles through. So I've been seeing a lot of headlines pop up that way. But yeah, on social media and things like that, I don't feel like I've been seeing as many pictures of victims or conversation
starters. I haven't seen any pictures of victims.
Yeah.
I think maybe also part of it is just we've been so inundated with the 24-hour news cycle, which was not a thing when that bridge collapsed as much.
Yeah.
And now I think we are just so kind of, I hate to use this word, but everyone will know what I mean. We're kind of addicted to the next thing. What's the next thing? We're always trying to get the next thing.
Yeah.
And I think
this is kind of drawn out. You know, they're having to do this recovery mission now. At first they were, just trying to find as many people that were alive as they could and pull everyone out. But as of July 7th, authorities say they're transitioning from a rescue mission to recovery and that the missing victims are presumably dead.
Well, how long has it been? I mean, a couple weeks?
It's the 24th to, 2.5 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah.
Ugh. I mean, luckily, the portions of the building that were not as collapsed, most people were able to be rescued and gotten out, in the rubble and things like that, which is great. But the people that were in the portion of this complex where it collapsed, very, very few survived.
Yeah.
It's thought that the cause of the collapse was due to a long-term degradation of reinforced concrete support structures in the underground parking garage due to water penetration and corrosion of the reinforcing steel. So that's a lot of words. But I'm picturing, you know, all of the things, like the parking garage is probably at the very, very bottom. That's your base structure. And if there's like water getting in, that's leaking and it's weakening that structure and it's weakening the steel, slowly but surely this building is going to fall apart. And I guess there was a report back in 2018 that pointed this problem out. And that's what three years ago, mm-hmm. they were like, hey, this yeah. is a problem and this needs to be fixed. And it's been noted now that it was, quote, much worse. Well, obviously, you let it go for 3 more years more damage.
Yeah, and I think I said this on a past episode, and I haven't done a ton of reading about this, but I believe I did read that, like, they fired those people. Like, the people who were like, hey, this is gonna be a problem. Like, you need to take care of this problem. They were like, okay, you don't have a job anymore, basically, because they were like, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think they said like, oh, we were dealing with it or whatever. But
yeah, there was like supposedly this $15 million program to rebuild and it was approved, but like no work had been done yet. So it sounds like they were just really dragging their feet, not wanting to get this thing done. So yeah, I don't know about all the specifics of that. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody was kind of being like, hey, we got to fix this. And they were seeming annoying that they would just kick them off.
Well, because we live in a capitalist society.
Yeah.
And like, it's about making money. Anything that breaks into like your profit margins, which like this, you know, would have.
Yeah, but it's going to get so much worse because there's a resident already that filed a lawsuit against the Champlain South Condominium Association on the day of the collapse, seeking $5 million in damages. And that's probably going to happen with a lot of people.
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I think they said, I didn't write this down, but I think they said with the lawsuit that they're not going to do like a bunch of personal lawsuits. I think what's probably going to happen is like they come together as a group of, you know, survivors and things like that and try to get something from this condominium association. So as we discussed, the death toll is up to 95. Of those, 83 have been identified and 80 families of the deceased have been notified. Officials have identified 3 of the youngest victims this past Sunday, and they are Anna Sophia Pettengill Lopez Morea and her sister Alexia Maria, who were 6 and 9. They were both recovered on July 7th. They were the last 2 members of their family to be identified. Their younger brother, Luis Vicente, who was the youngest victim of the collapse, was also recovered earlier that day on July 7th. This family is interesting because their mother, Sophia, who I believe also perished, was the sister of Paraguay's first lady.
I mean, were there any survivors in this family?
Actually, here we go. No, there was. So in their condo was the mother, the father, the children, and their nanny, and they all perished.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, every tragedy is a tragedy, obviously, yeah. But these kinds of things that wipe out entire families.
Well, and like, I just think about it this way. I'm sitting in my home where I feel safe. I'm hanging out. Maybe I'm sleeping. Well, this is like 1 p.m. So let's say like we're having an afternoon snack or a late lunch and you're just going about your business, everyday life. And then
or you're working from home because maybe you're not back in the office yet from, you know, like.
Exactly. And it's like in an instant, an entire family is wiped out. Like you're just going about your day. You're not doing anything dangerous. You're in your home where you should feel safe. And everybody's gone.
That shit is the most wild shit to me. Like, that's always the thing that I talk to Anthony about. Like, I talked to him about it whenever, you know, Kobe died.
Yeah.
I was just like, imagine just you wake up one morning. It's a normal morning and you are dead. Like, the entire family gone. By noon, you know? And like, that is just the craziest thing to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
That's something that could happen to any one of us at any time.
Nobody is safe.
You know?
Nobody is safe. The thing to me is like being in your home and like whenever there's like a crime in someone's home, I feel the same way. It's like where you're supposed to feel safest and most secure. I heard a story the other day about a guy who had like a some sort of like electrical thing burst in his home and like the whole thing was like on fire and he had like third degree burns over 80% of his body. And like he was just watching a movie with his girlfriend and then all of a sudden just whoosh, he's on fire. Like that kind of stuff is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Four other children between the ages of 4 and 11 have been identified over the last few weeks, including sisters Emma and Lucia. I never noticed, I have a friend Lucia. And I don't know if it's Lucia or Lucia, so I'll say both. So,
there's also Lucia.
Lucia.
It's pronounced several different ways.
Yeah. Emma and Lucia Guara, who were 4 and 11, and they were buried in the same casket last week.
Awful.
Awful. Absolutely awful. So recovery, and I'm sure more lawsuits are still underway. They are still trying to find and identify every person that should have been there and figure out what happens to everybody. And it's bad. It's really, really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's devastating.
Yeah.
Well, I have something that's similarly devastating, but you know what? Let's put that on hold for later. That one will keep.
Yeah.
This is not good either, but it's going to be probably a lot of me ranting. So
go for it. I love that.
U.S. COVID-19 cases have doubled in recent weeks. Y'all, listen, I know that most of the people who listen to the show, y'all are smart, right? I would guess that probably most of you are vaccinated.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you probably have a really good reason.
Yeah, I feel like especially for like younger kids are just starting to get vaccinated. Like there was a young girl that came into work that was checking out today that said that she just got her second shot yesterday and she had her mask on and everything like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, there's a whole group of people now that are just starting to go mm-hmm. through that process.
Yeah, which I look, so no judgment on that front. No. I understand there are also people who have illnesses, right? Like who can't get the vaccine. Like there's reasons. Like I understand it.
Yeah. My friend Lauren can't get vaccinated.
I get it. I mean, there are reasons. Like yeah, which is sucks. Why the rest of us are supposed to get vaccinated. That's exactly. the point. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is that there are like vulnerable people, right? Who don't have a choice in the matter. So the US is averaging more than 23,000 new cases a day. Double the 7-day average of around 11,300 cases 3 weeks ago. So we doubling the week average in a day right now. Like that's what's happening. And it's due to the new highly transmissible Delta variant of the disease. According to the CDC, nearly all recent COVID-19 cases and deaths are among unvaccinated people. So not surprisingly, states like Texas and Missouri that have low vaccination rates are being absolutely ravaged. So in my hometown of Springfield, Missouri.
Of Springfield.
Sorry, I was going to like say something else. I'll say it over.
No, don't say it over. Please keep it in. I really like how you said it. In your home of Springfield, yes.
Yes, in my hometown of Springfield, Missouri, I'm about to name and shame y'all. Nearly 1/3 of the patients in the ER have contracted the Delta variant. So people who are going to the ER, which is where you go if you like accidentally stepped on a nail or, you know, like 1/3 of the ER are people who have contracted the Delta variant.
Oh my gosh.
Missouri at 39% has one of the lowest rates of full vaccination in the nation. And Greene County, where Springfield is, falls at around 34%. So this go around, what's different, this go around is a lot of things. The Delta variant is a far more aggressive, which was bad before. This is a more aggressive version. And because a lot of 65 and older people have now been vaccinated, what we are seeing is young people getting this, like being affected by this. I have a friend here in California who is in the hospital right now as we speak with COVID.
Oh my gosh, are they vaccinated?
No, because she's pregnant, which is very scary.
Oh my gosh.
Her doctor told her, which I'm not a doctor, okay? So I don't know all the ins and outs of her medical history.
Right.
But her doctor told her not to get vaccinated because she had a high-risk pregnancy. And again, I don't know the ins and outs of her situation.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But I have two of my best friends had babies recently.
Yeah.
And both of them, they were prioritized.
Yeah.
On the vaccination list. Like they got vaccines before any of us because they were pregnant. Because it was actually better for the mother to get the vaccine than to contract COVID while
that's
pregnant.
That's what I was going to say. To me, it seems like a higher risk for her to get COVID and get sick and possibly hurt her unborn child.
Yes.
And get her unborn child sick rather than get the vaccine. I don't know. Again, not a medical expert, don't know the medical history. But yeah, to me, it sounds like I would rather take my chances with the vaccine than take my chances and get sick with COVID, because then God knows what's going to happen.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, right. I mean, and that was my understanding as well with my friend Amy, who got vaccinated. You know, of course, when you're pregnant, you ask all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Like, is this okay? You know, how is it going to affect the baby? And her doctor told her, like, it is better for you to be vaccinated because pregnant women are high risk and so susceptible to getting COVID.
Right.
And can pass it on, like, through the umbilical cord can pass the disease
exactly.
on.
Anything so, that's happening to you is going to happen to the thing that is attached to your umbilical cord.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So,
everything is the same.
It does not look fun for her right now. She was texting me last night. She has pneumonia. Like, she can't breathe.
And is the baby okay?
At the moment, I believe so, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. I would just be a complete wreck.
Yeah.
I'd be a complete wreck.
Yeah. Again, like, it's young people who are getting this. And the Delta variant is 50% more infectious than the Alpha mutation, which itself was 50% more contagious than the original COVID-19 that began, to sweep across the country last year.
Yeah.
So vaccines, or not vaccines, diseases can, they always mutate. Viruses
yeah.
mutate. They can mutate in a couple of different ways, right? They can mutate and stay kind of very similar, or they can mutate and become less deadly or,
yeah.
you know, less infectious. This has mutated several times and it has always gotten more aggressive.
Well, and that's like, exactly what they assumed would happen, you know, that there could be more and more variants. They are going to become more and more aggressive. I don't know how they knew that, but I do remember Dr. Fauci talking about that in the beginning, that whole worry about what could happen. And that's why, you know, we've talked about it. That's why even with the flu virus, we get different flu vaccines every year. They're a little bit different.
Right. And it's
because
it's why they tell you, like, even if you've had COVID, to get the vaccine anyway, because it could stop the spread of these variants. It could
yeah.
stop variants from being created like this.
Yeah.
So experts' long-term fear is that the more it goes unchecked, infecting people at its accelerated rate, the greater the chance that it will mutate into something worse, which we might not, even those of us who are vaccinated.
That's what I was going to say, that if it mutates to something different enough and bad enough that even us being vaccinated won't be protected from it. Because that's my biggest concern, is I'm always checking, like, am I still protected?
Right.
Okay,
and we
yes,
are.
Right now I am.
From the Delta variant,
yeah.
we are. But if it mutates again, there was an expert who was basically saying it's a race against time, because if this mutates into something that the vaccine doesn't cover, we will have to basically, like, reformat the vaccine,
yeah.
which was going to take time, right?
And isn't it so, I don't mean to cut you off here, but
oh,
isn't
no, you're
it good. So wild to be, like, living this vaccinated life and to kind of feel like in a lot of ways our lives are back to normal? Like, I haven't been wearing a mask at work. Everything seems to be just kind of, like, slowly going back to quote unquote normal, you know, pre-COVID. Yet there are still so many places and people where it's such a huge part of their lives that it just seems crazy to me, because it isn't as big of a part of my life now as it was a couple months ago.
Well, and it's,
you know,
not
what I mean?
The thing is, I'm getting ready to go to Springfield
yeah.
next week. I can guarantee you nobody is wearing masks there. Even with the low vaccination rates, I can guarantee you no one is. And the only people whose lives this is really affecting are the people who get sick, their families, and healthcare workers. Healthcare
yeah.
workers, in this article I read, which was specifically talking to people in Springfield, like healthcare workers in the hospitals there, they're burnt out. They're devastated. They're
yeah.
fucking pissed, right? Because they're like, why are we in this situation again? And it's really hard too, because yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I wore a mask today whenever I ran to the grocery store.
Yeah.
But in general, yeah, I'm going out again. I'm seeing people again in a lot of ways. It does feel like our lives are going back to normal. But I do personally know people who I love who aren't vaccinated. So
yeah.
I could contract something, and while I might be
fine,
in large part protected, I can still pass it on. That's my concern in going into a place that's largely unvaccinated. I'm not worried about myself. I'm vaccinated.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Like, but then it's also like, And I don't mean for this to sound callous, but it's also like that's kind of your own choice at this point, unless you are medically unable to get the vaccine, which in that case, you should be wearing a mask. You should be socially distancing yourself from people.
But that sucks for those people. It sucks for those people who cannot. That's on you. It sucks for the people who cannot get vaccinated for medical reasons or children or whoever else. It sucks for them that they're going to have to continue to stay in or modify their lives because of selfish people who are refusing to get the vaccine and continuing their lives as normal, right?
Yeah, like, and that's the thing is, like, I feel horribly that these people are sick and that we're going through all this, but at the same time, it's like we've given you the out.
Yeah.
We've given you the best out to end this whole thing and to have your lives start to go back to normal. And if you've decided not to do that, well, you've made the bed. You got to lay in
it. And
it's
for such a dumb reason, too, because it's like, yeah, there are people who are anti-vax, right? And we knew that that percentage of the population existed. We could have anticipated this from them. But the truth is that a lot of this has to do with it's become a politicized culture war issue.
Exactly.
It's not even like everybody who's refusing to get the vaccine right now is anti-vax.
Yeah.
It's just that they're so entrenched in their side that they're not getting the vaccine because that's not what their side does.
You know what I mean? Because Joe Biden is telling them to get vaccinated. They're like, no, we're not going to get vaccinated. That kind of thing.
It's to the point where at CPAC in Texas, which is, again, another state with very low vaccination rates.
Right.
The crowd actually cheered when an anti-vaccine reporter, in quotes, journalist, truth seeker, as he would have you believe, he spoke at the conference and he mentioned, like, as like a go you guys are doing great, mentioned their low vaccination rates in Texas.
Oh my gosh. The crowd
cheered. It is wild to me.
Yeah, that's a way of thinking that I don't understand. I can't get there. I don't understand how that could be an exciting thing.
Because you fully bought into this lie, right? Yeah. Like you fully bought that, like, you are right, they're wrong. I mean, again, I'm not going to...
Well, y'all are the ones who are still dying, so...
I'm not going to call out my family members, but I still get messages, like, saying that, like... people are dying from the vaccine and like the vaccine's what you should be worried about or there's nothing worthwhile in it. Like it's
terrifying.
It's mind-boggling. We're living in separate realities and unfortunately it's going to affect all of us and that should scare everybody because none of us want to go back inside.
Okay? No.
We don't.
Keegan is literally like pulling the skin on her face. Like we don't want to go inside.
I can't handle it. I can't. Deal.
I mentally cannot go through another pandemic. I'll be gone. I'm sorry. Like, I don't think that I have the mental strength, especially right now, to go through it again. Can't do it. Sorry.
So please. I'm trying with the people in my life. Please try with the people in your life. I know it might be futile. Like, I know that it's not your responsibility at the end of the day. Like, you can only do what you can do. But like, for the sake of everyone, like, we got to get this shit under control or we're going to have another like winter.
God. Well, do you want me to cheer you up a little bit?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the nominations for the Emmy Awards came out.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And MJ Rodriguez became the first trans woman up for a major acting Emmy.
Very exciting.
I love it. I wrote the first thing in my notes. The category is... Trailblazers.
Oh, wow.
So she is nominated in the lead drama actress category for her portrayal as Blanca in FX's Pose. We've talked about Pose a lot on this show. I know that you had friends that worked for the show.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. I was a little disappointed in the final season, but I love the series as a whole. And I love MJ Rodriguez. I'm so glad that she is getting this time to shine. And she told Variety magazine, "A moment like this extends and opens and elongates the possibilities of what's going to happen. And I believe the Academy is definitely making it possible and their eyes are more than open. Yes, I do believe they're going to continue. And I also feel like we're going to keep speaking and encouraging and informing and educating people around the world. I think that's the most important thing." So before MJ Laverne Cox was the first trans actress to get a nomination as a guest star for her role on Orange is the New Black in 2014, and she's received nominations in that same category 3 other years. So this is the very first time that a trans actor, actress otherwise, has been nominated for this kind of award. Pose itself has been nominated for Outstanding Drama Series, and Billy Porter received his 3rd nomination for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series. And there was one other thing that I wanted to mention, because I think that it's definitely something that I think needs to be thought about and needs to be figured out. There is an actor by the name of Asia Kate Dillon, who was also on Orange is the New Black, and she is on... what's the show? I want to say it's like a Showtime show. I gotta look it up now. Billions. They're on the show Billions.
Oh, okay.
And they've talked about the fact that it's like, well, what do you nominate them for? They're a non-binary actor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do the male category? Do you do the female category? There really is no space for non-binary performers right now if we keep splitting it by gender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so while I'm like so excited that a trans woman is getting this kind of acknowledgement as a female actress, mm-hmm. And getting that validation, as well as, you know, not just for her own identity, but for her the work that she's done and the amazing performances she's made, where is that leaving the many, many, many non-binary performers that are possibly, like, this show Billions has been on for a while. Asia Kate Dillon has been, like, a huge part of that, has gotten lots of applause for their role in that. But how would they be nominated?
Right. I mean, it's becoming more of a thing in general. Like, I know when Netflix announced the cast for Sandman, there is a non-binary actor on that show as well. And they listed the pronouns for everyone whenever they posted that, which I thought was a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But it does bring up a good point. And I know that there have been people who have been advocating for a long time to do away with the actor-actress categories.
Yeah.
And just have one category.
Yeah.
Which I understand. However, my concern with that is, I don't know. Maybe this isn't even really like a concern. It's like first world problems. Like, it's like, oh, but there will be less awards, right? If you do that, because it's going to cut the number of categories in half, essentially.
Right.
And you can have more people in each category. Like, you can have the same number of people per category.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's still only one winner per category. So that's going to cut down the number of awards given out.
Totally. And my other concern too is, like, if you're putting everybody together, you know, the Academy and a lot of these, you know, old white men that are in these organizations, mm-hmm. are very stuck in a patriarchal, yep. mindset.
I think less women will win. Non-binary people will win.
Right, exactly. So if we're going to put, you know, Laura Dern and
Gary Oldman in the same category,
Gary Oldman is probably going to get it. Just
right.
Because, you know what I mean? And that's what's frustrating. That if you were to throw non-binary performers in there, they're going to be pushed even further to the bottom of the list.
Right. Like, it's, I see, it's such a difficult issue, because that's always the way I felt about it. Like, I understood people were advocating for, like, we shouldn't split it up by gender anymore. Like, it's so antiquated. And I'm like, it is. However, it's been such a journey to get to this point where we can have recognition,
yeah.
for everybody, that if I just fear, same as you, like, cutting the number of awards that are given out.
Right. Well, because we haven't reached that level of equality where all nominations are going to be treated equally.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works. Like, there is bias involved with all of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if there isn't going to be a set equality, even when there are these separate, you know, gendered categories, how would we expect there to be any sort of success if they're all lumped together? So yes, in a perfect world, if it's going to be treated incredibly fairly and just based on performance and no one is going to be biased about their opinion of who should win, then yes,
but it's
by
impossible.
All means, let's bring everyone together.
It's impossible, though. I
exactly.
mean, like, it's impossible
right now.
As it is now. I mean, yeah. like, it's still so hard. Like, the Emmy nominations were far more diverse this year than I've seen in past years.
Oh,
but
my,
like,
gosh, yeah.
It's still so hard,
yeah.
to have an Oscar season where all of the people sweeping the top categories aren't white. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't know. It's so difficult. But yeah, that is something that absolutely needs to be remedied. And yeah. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I have no idea. Because then at the same time, it's like, what are you going to, you're not going to create a whole separate, there's right. no way anyone's going to create a separate category for the non-binary performers, although that would be great. I can't see anybody in authority making that happen right now.
Not right now, because it would be the same, unfortunately, because there isn't enough representation yeah. in the industry right now, it would be the same five non-binary actors represented yeah. over and over.
Yeah, but at the same time, the more visibility, the more people are coming out as non-binary or being on the gender spectrum, hopefully, you know, maybe there's got to be more actors that mm-hmm. are already 100%. Out there that are probably already there. You know what I mean? That's the thing. Right. Like, statistically speaking, it's like we need more people to come out and make themselves visible that are in those places of power and visibility well, that can possibly help
yeah, change I mean, happen. I think the issue is that most, and we know how hard it is to get cast in this yeah. industry, and probably there are, I'm absolutely sure, so many non-binary actors out here who are amazing auditioning for roles every day.
Yeah.
But they're not getting cast.
Exactly.
Right? Like, because that's the nature of this fucking industry.
But that's why it's going to take somebody who's already established, who already has a voice, where they are, you know, if they could just come out and be themselves, I think that that would open the door for a lot of other performers to do the same. I've seen it in the music industry a lot more, you know, Demi Lovato, Halsey, all of these people, where I feel like because there are these already well-established people that are coming out, that possibly that can help create more change than someone who's like coming up in the industry that's had a few roles or that's, you know, isn't as popular in the music industry. I think it does take somebody who already has notoriety that could possibly move the needle a little bit.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it would be hard for someone like you and I to make that kind of a change. Right. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's happening and we're seeing it happen, but it's happening very slowly, which is kind of how this, how it, anytime something like this happens and like barriers are being broken, it happens slowly over time. But I think as time goes on, we need to get over that already. Like, we need to just, like, when we realize there's a problem, we need to find a way to fix the problem. Like,
yeah.
It can't just be this incremental, gradual change, like, to progress.
Yeah, you have to pay your dues or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Like, no, there's an issue. Like, let's figure out how to fix the issue. I don't know how to do it. Luckily, it's not my job to figure
exactly.
that out.
Exactly.
But somebody should figure it out.
Yeah, it's somebody's job. So. Somebody has that job. Well, and today we are recording on Wednesday, July 14th, and today is Non-Binary Awareness Day, Visibility Day, one of those things. So we're kind of on brand with our topic. I believe this week is all about like non-binary visibility and things like that. I'm saying week tentatively because I don't know if it's like a month-long thing or what's going on, but I know I've been seeing it a lot online.
But it's happening.
It's happening. Whatever it is, it's happening, and we're going to talk about it. The end. All right. Is that all we got for the day?
Yeah.
It's so weird that I can't see the timer on the computer right now. So I'm like, have we done a whole episode? We did the thing. Wonderful. All right, everybody. If there's anything that you would like for us to talk about in our news episode next week, please go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. Or direct message us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go ahead and like and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. And if you want to show us the most love, you're going to hop on over to your Apple Podcast app, leave us a 5-star review, and write a quick sentence about why you love us. I was actually looking at old reviews the other day to look and see if we had any new ones. And I feel like a lot of podcasts have like literally like a sentence and the stars. Mm-hmm. Our listeners write like paragraphs.
I love to see it.
But I'm like, that's so on brand for us.
I love it.
Like, they can't just say a few things. Like, we can't just say a few things. It's got to be like a whole novel of feelings. And I'm like, I get that.
Those are my favorite.
Exactly. Me too. They're so much fun. So if you haven't left us a review, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And you will be featured on our Instagram for Reviews Day Tuesday. That's all we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.